And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive. Can I take these off?
All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's what, man. Where did you get this? I'm talking to you, with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Change Agent's Dilemma for Tuesday, January 15th, 2013. I'm your host, Heather Stegall, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, as I do once a month on Blog Talk Radio. This show is one of the many ways I help equip individuals to lead organizational change at Enclaria. The Change Agent's Dilemma is how to influence change without authority, and my goal with this show is to provide ideas and share stories to help you do just that. Today, my guest is Martha Greenway, who is here to share a story about gaining agreement on a blueprint for change. Martha has over 25 years of executive experience in strategy and performance management in the public and nonprofit sectors. In addition to overseeing program evaluation and strategic planning, she has managed areas as diverse as communications, technology, human resources, student assessment, charter schools, grant making, and resource development. She served as deputy superintendent of a Georgia school system, Fulton County Schools, serving 95,000 students in urban, suburban, and rural communities. She also worked extensively within the United Way system, including a role as Vice President of Planning and Policy at the National Organization. Martha, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Sure. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
So when we first started talking about you being a guest on my show, I explained that the audience is generally people who are trying to implement change from within their organization, usually people who don't have authority. And you brought up an example that you thought would be a great thing to share that happened while you were at Fulton County Schools. So why don't you go ahead and just to start us off, just set up what was the challenge?
Sure. Fulton County Schools was exploring transition to a charter system. This is a process whereby the state of Georgia allows a school system to waive certain aspects of state law in order to implement innovative practices. In turn, then individual schools in the school system form inclusive governance councils that propose innovations at the school level. We needed to know if the community would support such a transition before moving forward with a proposal and eventual implementation. The state of Georgia only required a public hearing on the matter, but as you'll hear as we go through a little bit more about this story, the nature of our community required much more than that.
Okay. So what was your plan of attack?
Well, we wanted to make sure that all of the stakeholders understood, first of all, what a charter system meant. It's a very complex message that requires explanation. So, you know, the typical press release or superintendent message really wasn't going to be sufficient to have people understand the implications of this, much less be supportive of it. There were also a lot of misconceptions about the idea of a charter system that we had to dispel. One of the, I think, preeminent ones that we heard was that all of our employees would be let go and need to reapply for their positions.
Wow.
You know, this initiative was falling into an environment where there was lots of change going on in public education, lots of talk about school transformation, lots of talk about failing schools. And so we were, you know, entering into an already confusing network of messages. And so to try to have our message be clear was really a challenge. So we used internet, we used small groups face-to-face, we used large community forums, and in the end we did use mass media. And we also created opportunities for two-way communication, obviously through the face-to-face vehicles, but we posted what I kind of call an eternal Q&A on the website. It's actually still out there, so that as new questions arose, we just kept populating that Q&A so that people could have a constant source of the truth that they could go back to. So that was sort of our overall concept as we entered into this.
Okay. So who were some of the different stakeholder groups that
right.
you had to get on board?
Well, let me just give a brief overview of Fulton County Schools itself. It's unique in many ways. It has over 90,000 students in 96 schools, but more critically, geographically, we're about 80 miles long, and the city of Atlanta has its own school system, but they are geographically right in the middle of Fulton County, which means that the Fulton County school system is actually physically divided into two discontinuous pieces, with all of the Atlanta traffic in the middle of us. So that makes communicating, particularly face-to-face opportunities, a big challenge. In addition, our community is extremely diverse. Parts of our community are very wealthy. Other parts have characteristics of an inner-city urban community with high poverty, high mobility, high incidences of child neglect. We also have areas that are still rural with horse farms. And then we have other areas that have large immigrant populations and issues with non-English speakers. So essentially, we have multiple varied communities in this one school system. It's essentially a microcosm of the United States. So we needed to reach out to all parts of the geography, but we also wanted to make sure that we addressed our parents, we addressed our students, we addressed our teachers and our staff, and the broader community as a whole. And so we created a very orchestrated approach to try to do that.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about that approach.
Sure. So one of the smartest things we did in retrospect was we invited a little group of eight people to come and sit with us to just sort of talk about the message, give us reaction to our message. And this included some principals and some parents, and it included some people who were fairly engaged with the school system, and then it also included people who really never done anything outside of their individual school. So we went over our plan for our message, and these folks just absolutely tore it apart. So I was so thankful that we took that baby step first, because we planned to go out and try to explain what a charter system was and then ask people to tell us if they were in favor of it. And it was really clear that that was the wrong question, because the concept was far too difficult for people to react to at first exposure and very hard for people to grasp how something so large and complex would impact me or my student or my job or my school. So we changed the message to a much more open-ended question whereby we asked people how they thought our school system could be improved. So instead of a telling approach, we switched it to a listening approach. So let me just try to succinctly walk through the next steps. We have a regular meeting where all of the principals come together every month. So as we went through each of these steps, we kept going back and updating our principals and our central office leadership. So you might think about this as, you know, communicating with your field staff and then also with your headquarters staff once a month. And then our board members also hold community meetings every month where it's completely open to anybody who lives in the area that they represent. And they also use those to sort of keep a running dialogue. But we also had already in place advisory councils. So there were small representative groups that met quarterly of parents. There was a group for students. There was a group for teachers. And there was a group for community leaders. So we went out to them first, which helped us refine our message, but also get some sort of early, I won't say adopters, but at least people who got the message before the broader community.
Okay, so these were groups that were already, they already met, they already knew each other, and they were also already engaged in the school system in general.
Exactly, and they were generally positioned as leadership roles within their stakeholder group. So each school, for example, nominated a teacher to be on the Teacher Advisory Council. Each high school nominated a junior and a senior. Each parent high school cluster represented a parent to represent them. So they already had stature within their stakeholder groups. So that was a really important place to start.
Mm-hmm.
We then planned seven community forums. And these were broad, open meetings. We actually structured them with two time slots so that the faculty, the staff of the schools in central office came at one time, and then parents and community members came at another time, and that allowed us to record their input separately and see if there were any differences, which was really important. At the forums, we made a big group presentation to try to explain very generally about what a charter system meant, but then we immediately allowed people to go into small discussion groups in classrooms and provide us input on the question of how can we improve our school system. Another thing that we did as part of that ended up working out really well is we took our headquarter administrators and we made them be the scribes in the breakout discussion groups. So we made that a requirement for them. They had to all sign up, and that kind of forced them to hear the message, but also to hear directly from the constituents and be part of the process. After we got all that information, we typed it up, we categorized it, we prioritized it, and we then separated, here are the things we heard that we can go ahead and do now, and here are the initiatives that people proposed that we could better implement if we were a charter system and had flexibility from state law. So that then kind of allowed us to position the charter system as a way to achieve things that our stakeholders said they wanted. And we posted that on the internet where it was publicly accessible to anybody. We then presented that to our board. They discussed it over 2 months, and that was all public forums that were televised. They're actually on the TV channel if anybody wanted to watch them. And then they voted to move forward with the charter system. So once we did that, then we flipped our message to having more detail about how the charter system would work. And we put a presentation with a voiceover on the internet. We held another round of big town hall meetings for people to come and hear the message. We went back out to those advisory committees, and we also went anywhere people invited us. And that was interesting. We had community civic groups invite us to come and talk about it. We had school communities that wanted a presentation in their own community. We had the chambers that wanted to hear about it. And we then put together a formal proposal, which was, again, posted, discussed publicly on television, and then submitted that forward to the state. So that's kind of a long explanation of all the steps we went through to try to shape the message and communicate it.
Great. So what would you say worked and what didn't work?
Well, the broad exposure definitely worked. I mean, I don't think with a community of our size you ever get everybody to understand it, but I think by the time we were finished, most of the folks that felt like they had a stake in the school system knew about the charter system initiative and knew how to find out information about it. So we managed to ensure that all of our stakeholders were informed at some level, and to do so in a way that, for the most part, I think they perceived that it was an open process. What didn't work so well is that we didn't anticipate some of the issues and concerns that would emerge. I think we kind of made some assumptions about how the message might be received, and we weren't prepared when the reaction was not quite what we expected. So let me give a few specifics about that. There were some people in our community that had very, very detailed questions, you know, that went and got the state education law and read through it and made assumptions that we were going to throw out and stop doing some things that are really actually very good for students, like things about safety and so forth. And so I don't think we anticipated that people would get quite that invested in it and that we would have to respond to very technical questions. Another thing that came up is that a lot of the energy around the ideas of charter schools and charter systems is that you're giving more local control to the school. You're freeing it from bureaucracy and allowing it to do all the innovative things that it can't do because of the laws and regulations around public education. But what we didn't anticipate was that some people thought that the Board of Education was pushing authority down to the local schools as a way to abdicate responsibility. In other words, that the locally elected Board of Education was saying, okay, schools have all the authority, no longer our problem. And there was a lot of suspicion about that, and people who really were opposed to that. And we didn't anticipate that coming up at all. And that was particularly an issue in some of the lower performing schools where the people in that community felt like they were going to just be abandoned by the school system. So a third issue, again, back to this idea of this presumption that local control is a good thing that everybody wants, a lot of the parents and teachers were really concerned that there was going to be unchecked experimentation in their school, that these governance councils that aren't necessarily all experts in education or instruction were going to come up with these, you know, sort of harebrained ideas for changes and then get them approved, and then their students were going to be subject to these irresponsible innovations. And that wasn't something that we'd really considered at all. And along sort of that same line of awareness about local control, there were also a broad group of parents who were very concerned about the type of people who might get themselves elected to these local school governance councils and be driving change, and the concern that those people might not represent the best interest of all the students, that they could have some partisan agenda, or that they could really only be concerned about their child and propose changes that might advantage some children over other children. So there was a lot of distrust about giving control in the school to a small group of parents. So we were kind of blindsided by those issues, and they almost derailed the conversation because they were not just brought up by a few people, but there were large groups of people that had those concerns, and so we started hearing them over and over again, and then they started to communicate via the internet, and it became a real force for resistance.
Wow, interesting. So looking back, do you think that there's any way that you could have foreseen any of that?
I don't know. That's a really good question. You know, maybe if we'd spent more time before we crafted the message, just having more informal conversations, we could have picked some of this up. But I also think some of these people, they were the people that we had to go out to before they were going to hear the message. And until we got out to them, we really didn't know what they thought. And we were on kind of a tight timeline, so we didn't have a whole lot of time to do sort of the subtle recognizance work before we launched. But fortunately, we did hear it early enough that before we put our final proposal together for the state, we were able to come up with some ways that addressed their concerns. And a lot of that was done through some individual conversations with people, and others of it was done through some changes that we then communicated through these advisory groups and through these board community meetings. So to be more specific, we changed our presentation deck to make more of an emphasis about the role of the Board of Education. Again, you know, when we walked into it, I think the legislators who introduced this, they thought everybody wanted to be free of the Board of Education. So we didn't even talk about that. So we restructured our communications material to clearly show the Board of Education in the chain of command and what their responsibilities would still be moving forward. Then another thing that we did was we put processes in place as safeguards against activist sort of, if you want to use that word, parents or community members who might get on these governance councils. So to be specific, we developed a code of conduct that all members of the school-level governance councils have to sign that say things like they represent all students in the school, that they pledge to work collectively as a team, that they will not have business dealings with the school, so that there's at least a document that's signed by each member pledging to certain behavior. And then we also put processes in place where the councils are regularly monitored by the central staff, and they also complete a written self-assessment where each individual rates the council's performance confidentially each year, so that if these kinds of inappropriate behaviors are happening, we catch it and we can correct it. So that was an adjustment that we made. And then as far as people being, you know, concerned that their students were going to be guinea pigs in unchecked experimentation, we established a process whereby all school-level innovations that are proposed have to go to the superintendent and be signed off on to make sure that they're instructionally sound. And there has to be an evaluation plan in place so that the innovations are monitored to make sure that they're having the desired effect, but also, importantly, not having negative unintended consequences. So once we showed that we heard these folks and then we changed our proposal to specifically accommodate what they were concerned about, they came on board. So I don't know with, you know, as you know, Heather, with these initiatives, you can't always predict what people's concerns and issues are going to be.
Right.
But the important thing is if you learn about them before execution, then you can change the implementation in order to address those concerns. And I think, you know, we've been successful in doing that.
So how did you know that when you had enough people on board? You know, what were you really trying to get at as far as, like, how could you tell that you got commitment from each of these different stakeholder groups?
Well, one way was they stopped making noise, you know, and so we could tell if we would check back with them that, you know, in some cases they still had strong reservations, but they were, you know, willing to let it go forward, and, you know, made it clear they were going to be monitoring how it worked, but they weren't going to stand in the way of moving forward. And in the end, the board vote was unanimous, and we had no one speaking publicly against it. So that was kind of a cue to us that while people might have still had reservations, nobody felt strongly enough that they felt like they wanted to try to block it. So one of the things that was done as well, which I think is going to help with the implementation, is that of the 96 schools, a decision was made to stagger their transition to the charter system over a three-year period. And this was really for two reasons. One was because we knew there was some, you know, skepticism and maybe even suspicion out there, we wanted the first group to work through it to be people who were really invested in it. So by having 20 and allowing that to be voluntary, we felt like, okay, we've got people who want to be part of this in the first group. And then the other is that with any new initiative of this magnitude, you know, as you know, Heather, it doesn't go perfectly the first time. And so we asked that people only come forward if they made we're willing to make a commitment to be part of the design. And we were really clear. It's going to be messy. We're going to do things that aren't going to work the first time. You're going to have to be willing to be open and tell us that something's not working right and help us make it better. So the 20 principals and school communities that stepped forward, you know, they did so knowing that they're going to have to work a little harder than the people coming after them. So, you know, I call this group the leading edge schools that they're the ones that want to be part of the new thing. They like to be part of the design. They like to have their ideas influence what's happening. Then we'll have another group that comes next year, and I am calling them sort of the wait and see group. They're going to wait and let the bugs all get worked out and see how it goes. And I sort of jokingly call the people that will be in the third year the maybe it'll go away group. I think there are some who think that this has a pretty decent chance of failing, and maybe it'll fail before they have to actually participate. But if it doesn't fail by the time it's their turn, I think that, you know, we'll have been able to get the kinks out and demonstrate success, so they'll be, you know, much more willing participants. So that, I think, that, you know, any time with an implementation, you have the opportunity to stage it, both so that you can learn what's not working and fix it before you have a huge scope of implementation, but also so that you're working with the people who really want to be part of the change before you have to get everybody else engaged. You don't always have that luxury, but in this case, they were able to get the state to approve a staggered implementation like this.
Great. I love that, the maybe this will go away group.
Yeah, the maybe it'll go away group. We all know some people in that category.
Yeah. So what would you say is your key learning from this whole process?
Keep listening. And I think that's absolutely key. Even I'm still engaged, even though I'm now an independent consultant. We do have a grant from the state to help train the school governance councils that are being elected in these 20 schools or appointed, and to work with the principals. And even through this stage, we are still listening, and we are still going back and making adjustments. Because I think if at any point in this process we had stopped listening and said, oops, you know, it's already buttoned up, it's too late to address your concern, that could have really blown up. And you also can't assume that a small group only represents a small group. I think it's important to listen to everyone, because you are never sure how many other people might be standing behind them but aren't coming forward until maybe the concern escalates.
That's great. So just so everybody knows, how long did this whole process take from the point when, and maybe you can tell us when it started, but and then to the point where the board voted?
Yeah. It was an 18-month process from when we first, so the board voted in December of 2011, and then it took the state about 5 months to approve it, and then it actually launched this school year. So we started 18 months before that in about August. Actually, I think that first little group of people we pulled together may have been a July meeting in 2010. So it was a long process, and I think, you know, as I mentioned, the state, they require one public hearing before you do this. Mm-hmm. But with a system of people as complex as ours was, we really needed that full year to understand what people wanted us to do. And I think a key learning also is that by being able to position the charter system as a response to what our community told us they wanted our school system to do, that sort of generated a lot of buy-in by listening first and then coming out with the proposed change.
And luckily it fit, right?
Yes.
So. Okay. Well, how can people find out more?
Sure. If you're interested in learning more about this initiative of Fulton County Schools, please go to their website. It's fultonschools.org. And you will see, I believe there's still a button on the front page. It says Exploring Fulton as a Charter System. They've now wrapped this all into their strategic plan for the next 5 years. So it may also be under a link for strategic planning. But all the Q&A, the PowerPoint presentations that were done, and the actual application to the state that details the plan are all available on their website. And if people are interested in learning more about me and the work that I'm doing now, my website is greenwaystrategy.com. And my email address is martha@greenwaystrategy.com. And I would be, I'd love to hear from people if they have further questions about this project or anything else that we might be able to assist with.
Great. Well, Martha, thank you so much for being here, for sharing that story.
You're welcome.
Lots of lessons there.
Yes, it was a journey of love, but it was quite a journey, and I'm certainly always happy to talk about it.
Great, thanks. And thank you for listening to The Change Agent's Dilemma. If you'd like to be notified of future episodes and other resources to help you influence change in your organization, I invite you to sign up for my monthly newsletter at inclaria.com. Not only will you receive helpful tips, but when you subscribe, you will also receive a free chapter from my change management toolkit, The Irresistible Change Guide. Until next time, take care and best wishes for your change initiative.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
There are best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
There are best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty! Yeah.